Entertainment expands your horizons, takes you on fantastic adventures, challenges your skills. Independent media never looked so good. Welcome to a new sphere of influence. Our words mean business. Traditional families are honored, and the American flag still flies.
Greetings, everyone. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West here, and welcome to the Steadfast and Loyal program.
You gotta light 'em up before they burn it down. Save us all. They're gonna burn it down. Save us all. Before they burn it down.
Hey, greetings, everyone. Welcome back to the Steadfast and Loyal program. You know, we've had a lot of conversation with pastors. You know, we've had Eric Metaxas on here talking about his letters to the American church. And I think it's so important we continue to talk to pastors about what we see happening in the country and how the church has to make a stand and the body of Christ has to make a stand because we're facing evil in these times. And I'm very concerned about that. So we're being joined today by Pastor Brandon Thomas. He's the founding and senior pastor of Keystone Church, which is right here in Keller, Texas, where we tape our show. He holds a Master's of Divinity degree and a doctorate in church growth. His doctoral work was titled Connecting Postmodern People in Gated Communities to the Local Church. We're going to talk about that. He also helped form the foundational principles of Keystone Church. He is the author of Soul Search. He and his wife Susan have been married since 1998, and they have three daughters and a son. Pastor Brandon, thanks so much for being here with us.
It's a pleasure.
Hey, let's talk about what brought you into the ministry. Was there a road to Damascus moment for you? And, you know, where are you originally from, Texas?
Yeah, so I'm a preacher's kid.
That was it.
Yeah, I'm a preacher's kid. Yeah. And sometimes I can go a lot of different ways.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of jokes about that. But for me, I was loving the Lord and I was following the Lord, truly. But I was not going to follow in my father's footsteps just naturally. Mm-hmm. God kind of had to speak to me about it, and he did. When I was a senior, actually just graduated from high school, I was at a student camp. And God spoke to me very clearly, and I responded, and I haven't looked back since.
Now, in your progression of now being a senior pastor at Keystone, I mean, did you start out as a youth pastor? I mean, what was the progression for you?
So, I've done a lot of different things in ministry through the years, and being just my freshman year in college is when I really started ministering and really started trying to help people and reach people with the good news of Jesus. Then I've served in different churches, but ultimately in 2004, late 2004, my wife and I, we really were led by the Lord to start a church. And so we started it in our home, and that was Keystone Church.
Well, fantastic. And that was right here in Keller?
That's right here in Keller, actually North Fort Worth, which is technically Keller, but it's kind of Fort Worth.
Yeah.
But we started out there with a whole lot of homes coming up, and then God has moved us into a school, then moved us into a lease facility, a furniture store, and then recently we just built our first campus.
You have an amazing campus. I was fortunate to be able to go over and speak to some high school, a football team there. I mean, what was that vision like to take you from being in your home to where you are now on this magnificent campus where you are serving the body?
You know, like anything, I think that I learned a long time ago, like especially my doctoral work, I looked at the doctoral and I'm like, how can I do this? It's so big. And it was bigger than me.
Yeah.
And God gave me that word. It's that leadership principle, one bite at a time. Yeah. How do you eat an elephant?
How do you eat an elephant?
One bite at a time. Yeah. And, you know, that's the way God does. God just asks you to be obedient today.
That's it.
And when you're obedient today, you put together a few days. You've got a little beginnings of a pattern. You put together some months. And something has changed. And it's just the faithfulness in the everyday. God began to give us a vision to do something beautiful that when people drove by, it just echoed the beauty of God. And so we wanted to build a beautiful campus.
Yep.
But we wanted something that was iconic, that could last beyond us, that the generation after me, thinking forward, would embrace this campus. And we just wanted to be good stewards of the vision God had given us.
Now, How did you come up with the name Keystone? I think it's great. Most people will think about Cornerstone.
Right.
But how did you come up with the name Keystone?
You know, Keystone, it has, in the history, in the arch, the keystone's what holds the arch together in Roman architecture. Mm-hmm. And that was really our vision, is we felt like that the church in any community has a purpose to hold that community together. Yeah. And sometimes that's holding it together in unity. Sometimes it's a prophetic voice that holds it together. Yeah. But that was our vision. And Keystone has two elements to it. There's the key, mm-hmm. which is we want to unlock life change for everybody. But then there's the stone. We want to build your life on something that's right.
On Christ, the solid rock I stand.
You got it.
Now, you know, I remember, you know, and I don't know if you like classic rock, but I'm a Rush fan.
Come on, let's go. I'm
let's
in.
Go. And the song,
Neil Peart.
Ma, what a loss, go. Man. What
yes.
a loss.
Brutal.
And, but, you know, I remember the song Subdivisions. Mm. And when I saw this, your doctoral work, Connecting Postmodern People yes. in Gated Communities to the Local Church, I thought about that song Subdivisions mm-hmm. in our high school walls. And everywhere we create these subdivisions. You know, when you look at these gated communities, mm-hmm. it's kind of like we are separating that's ourselves right. away. And it says in the Bible we're to forsake not the assembly of ourselves right. together. How can we reach all of these people that now all of a sudden are saying, hey, you know, I just tune in online.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know, but that's not the answer.
Right. No, you nailed it. Do not forsake the assembling of yourselves together, which is the custom of some. You know, some people were even doing it. Can you imagine? In the first century church, there were people in that church that had seen the risen Christ and yeah. still. Yeah. I mean, so if they struggle with that,
yes.
you know, we're going to struggle with yeah. that. And so I think that the answer for them and the answer for us is several fold. Number one, you need to, I believe when you gather as a church, it should be the best moment in your week.
Yes.
I mean, God is there, right? So we want to create a moment that is worthy of the creator of the universe being in our presence. So we want to enter it with excellence. And something that they can't get online is the feeling yes. and the people and the conversations.
That interaction and community.
Interaction. You got it. And then I think secondly is an experience with God that you can have an experience with God through mediums like this, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there's something special about when God's people come together and you experience Him with others. It just breaks through a lot of noise. And so that's it for us, is really providing something that would woo them out
yeah.
into personal relationship.
Yeah. You know, I found it so interesting because I'll never forget 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I was stationed at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, wow. doing an exchange with the United States Marines. And we were there in the operations center when we saw the flight hit the second tower. And we knew right there, okay, we've got to go into planning mode. Something's up. We got to figure this out. And then you hear about the Pentagon. And then you hear about, you know, Shanksville, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania. You know, the place where everyone wanted to go was to church. I mean, that's where everyone said, we got to go to the Lord in this time of tragedy. But then you fast forward to 2000,
right.
and we go into this COVID pestilence. And the first thing the government wants to shut down are our churches. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you feel that there is a sincere and dedicated, almost intentional, purposeful assault against our Christian faith, our Judeo-Christian faith mm-hmm. heritage today?
Absolutely. In Ephesians 6, it talks about our battle is not against flesh and blood,
yes, exactly.
but against principalities and powers of darkness. And there is principalities, you could even see it as worldview.
Yes.
There is a secular worldview that is dominant in Western culture right now. And I don't view it just as a worldview. I believe it is the first European-born religion. Is secularism,
yes.
Born out of, you know, not to get too deep into it.
Marx and Engels.
Neo-Marxism,
yeah.
absolutely.
Marx and Engels, yeah, secular absolutely. Humanism. I mean,
absolutely.
Marx was an enemy of God. Marx
yes.
saw religion as his enemy because he wanted to make people believe that man and government, little g, instead of God with a big G, they could create a utopia. They could create all these things for you here on earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing that we see these principles creeping into a country like the United States of America right now.
I think part of it is we fell asleep on our universities.
Big time.
We fell asleep on our universities. We'd send our kids And we'd hear about a little rumblings of, oh, they're not really teaching what we believe. But there used to be a joke, right? Like you would have all these ideologies that you learned from school, but then when you hit the real world, all of a sudden the light comes on, and you're all of a sudden conservative politically, you're all of a sudden conservative at least fiscally. That's not true anymore. It is really started to seep in, and I believe it's what I wrote about. It's that postmodern ideology born out of the neo-Marxism, born out of the Marxist ideology, which is ultimately there is no truth. We get to create truth, and if there's no truth, there is no God. And so today, with the ideology as it is, you have people that it is full blown religion. I don't know it truly is. You have evangelists, you have tithes and offerings, you have acts of faithfulness, and you have consequences if you do not fall into the
persecution and prosecution. And so amazingly, because this moral relativism and this new religion of the left, which says that, you know, God wasn't smart enough to just have Adam and Eve, male and female. I mean, we can decide whatever we want to do and whatever we want to be. And how is it that we have churches and pastors that have fallen in line with this? Because I read in Romans 12 and 2, we're not supposed to conform to the world. We're supposed to transform by the renewing of our minds. So what is it that is going on? I read the book Woke Jesus and all of this stuff that's happening in the church today. How did it get there?
Yeah. You know, I believe I think sometimes pastors have a sincere heart. They want to connect with people. And there's a sincerity in their heart, their desire to reach people that are far from God. Sometimes, though, we can forget that we also have a duty of being salt and light. And that when the culture has run so far from the Lord, there has to be some voice that calls the culture back to truth. And about people coming back to church, I found that a lot of the churches that are really growing right now, and there are a lot of churches really growing right now, most of the churches that I have found that are growing right now, they are serving that prophetic voice to the culture. And the culture is coming back. They want to hear it. They want to hear something different. Often there's something in their soul, and I'm talking
God-shaped hole.
Yes, there's a God-shaped hole, and they're looking for truth that's different than what they'll hear on the radio. So I believe that it's an absent-mindedness almost. And sometimes it's not just absent-mindedness of your calling to really help. It's also a lack of understanding that we're giving away the next generation if we do not speak. The next generation is utterly being annihilated by this secular worldview, and we're losing them. And so if you are soft as a parent, your kids will deny Christ. You will grow, and you'll wake up, and you'll say, wait a second, I didn't sign up for this, but they're in their 30s and they want nothing to do with Jesus. They don't want to go to church. They don't want to come to your Christmas service. They don't want to do any of that. And you're brokenhearted. We're seeing this. And so there's a real burden in our heart to at least for the young generation.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I remember I grew up in the inner city of Atlanta, Georgia. And Sunday morning, you got up, you did your chores, you had breakfast with the family, and you were off to Sunday school. And, you know, all of us would come out of our houses at the same time, pretty much, you know, get together, walk to our respective churches, and you were in Sunday school, you were in church all day. If you tried to fall asleep, someone would wrap you upside the back of your head. Wednesday, you were going to, you know, Bible study, or you were practicing in the youth choir, even though you could not sing. During the summer, you had church retreat. For those of us, you had church sports league, being basketball, baseball. How do we get the church back engaged with young people like it was for me growing up?
I want to give you hope on this. I believe the number one felt need that I run across with people is the parenting of their children. And when I talk to other pastors, they're saying, we need more resource for parenting of our kids. And what they're really asking for is tools and techniques, but what they really need is the church. You know, and calling to what you're talking about, where the church is a part of your lifestyle. And other things have crawled into the throne of our heart. And I'm a big sports guy. I love sports. I have my kids doing everything.
College football season, man.
Oh, I'm so happy.
All those upsets.
Yes.
Hey, I'm sorry, folks, here in Fort Worth, but y'all ran to a storm this past weekend with Colorado.
Yes.
But you're right. I mean, there's so many things that we can tap into our young people, but it was just the same as when y'all invited me over to speak to the local high school football team. We got to make that connection. And I remember back in the day, before a high school football game there in Atlanta, you had a local minister to pray over the game. I mean, now today you get a bad letter from the Freedom of Religious Foundation and all of these chuckleheads, but we got to have the courage to stand up in these times.
That's a key word, is courage. Mm-hmm. I think courage, and I believe some people would be courageous if they understood. You know, part of it is a battle of convincing and really compelling people to understand. Like, I think if more pastors understood, you were losing the next generation. They might find their voice. Mm-hmm. But courage is the ingredient. Sometimes it's, God, would you show me what to do?
Yeah.
But then the next prayer is, now that you've told me what to do, God, would you give me the courage to That's do it? Right. And courage was revealed in, like you said, during the pandemic. It became very, very clear the power of groupthink. Groupthink is a nasty thing. It's unbelievable.
Mindless lemmings.
That's exactly right. And I think of the book 1984.
Yes, sir. George Orwell. Here we are.
It's shocking. Yeah. That used to be just an entertainment read of a cautionary tale. Now we're seeing it laid out in front of us. And I truly do believe that when we understand as church leadership that, hey, it's here. Groupthink is real. We need courage to pierce through. And God's given us everything we need for that.
You know, I've watched, you know, several of your sermons, and you're powerful. You're courageous. You are, I always tell people, fortune favors the bold, and you are bold. And that's what God told Joshua, to be strong and of good courage. You're supposed to be bold and know that, you know, the Lord is not going to leave you nor forsake you. Why is it that some of these pastors are worried about a 501c3 status? Mm-hmm. I mean, right. God is not going to ask you about your 501c3 status when you show up before Him.
That's right. That's so true. And you know, I go back to, first of all, calling. You know, have you truly been called? I've grown up in ministry, and I've known some people that they took it as a path of least resistance. The ministry for them was that. For others in different environments, I've been made aware that for some people in their community, for them to go into being a pastor was a pathway of honor. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted that honor. And they've even shared with me, you know, that's how I got in, is I wanted to be in a position of influence and leadership. And I think we've got to find that calling and conviction. And that really, when you sign up for this, you're putting a bullseye on your chest. This is not something that is privilege. God will bless us in the ministry. And I've certainly have been blessed with a great family, a great wife, and some dear friends in a wonderful growing church. But you have to be willing to pay a price. And I think if I were coaxing people, and we do, if I was coaching people on being called to ministry, I set the bar high, not low.
Absolutely. I mean, I'll never forget when I was in airborne school, Sergeant Blackhat, airborne instructor, said, you know, man, if you set the bar high, you're going to jump high. Mm-hmm. You set the bar low, you're always going to jump low. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the church and the body of Christ has to do once again, is returning to our first principles, returning to the Word and standing on the Word and in truth, and understand that there are people looking for that light, like you said, and that salt. And if we lose the flavor of the salt, then we have to be thrown out. So let's talk about, because there'll be some people from the left, you know, watching our little conversation, mm-hmm. and they'll say, and maybe some people also will say, you know, Republicans or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, you Christians should not be involved in all this political right. speak. I mean, that's not your place. And, you know, chapter 13 says, you're supposed to be subject to government. But we're supposed to be subject to righteous government.
That's right.
Am I right? That's so right. How do you explain to your congregation that you just don't sit back and you allow people to make laws to say, you know, your children are ours. Mm. And if you don't affirm our religion, you know, gender mutilation and gender dysphoria, we'll take your children away from you. Because last time I checked, it said train up a child in the way that they should go so that when they grow old, they shall not depart from it. It doesn't say government train up your child. You know, no Solomon doubt. Was talking to you.
No doubt.
Mom and dad.
No doubt.
But now we can't even have mom and dad.
That's right.
So how do you, from the pulpit, with conviction, get people to understand, you just don't, you can't lay down and take this?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, it's helpful for us to remember where Christianity came from. How Christianity was not embraced by the Roman Empire. That the Roman Empire was soaked.
It was a threat.
Oh, Christianity was a threat. That the Roman Empire was just soaked with sexual immorality. I mean, of all sorts. And that's the environment that the Christian church came up into. Mm-hmm. By the 300s, though, it had been such a dominant force. So that Constantine was like, hey, let's just make this the official religion. How did that happen? And there's a great book, I wish I could remember the name of the author. It's called The Rise of Christianity, and it talks about the power of the church. Again, like we said, step by step, day by day, and never giving in, never always holding fast. In my doctoral work, there's a wonderful librarian in the School of Alexandria, and the church was being heavily persecuted because they would not bend. Mm-hmm. They would not bend, and they were misunderstood. And he had an audience with Caesar, and he went before Caesar, and he was basically said, hey, you think this, that's not true. You think this, that's not true. And so he was standing on truth, mm-hmm. speaking boldly. But then he said this, he said, come walk with me. If you'll walk with me, I'll introduce you to a church, and you'll see struck, they do not strike back. You know, you'll see people that give, you'll see people that, but he was not bending his truth. So you can have truth. Mm-hmm. And you can have compassionate community at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that combination is what changed the Roman world. It is a truth. And you see that also with, again, I'm geeking out a little bit with you, but on history, St. Patrick.
Yes,
the whole Roman world was falling to German influence and falling into paganism. And many believe that St. Patrick's work in Ireland, it literally saved the Western world. And what was it? It was his truth. He held to Orthodox Christianity, but also community. And again, back to the point, get in church, have a vibrant community that's talking about these things and wrestling with these things and challenging one another, but don't let go of your truth. You can have your truth and you can see people at the same time. And that's what you're
doing. But interestingly enough, you bring up the story of St. Patrick, the true story of St. Patrick. Mm-hmm. But now the world, society, has just turned into a drunken debauchery.
That's right.
That's what we think of St. Patrick's Day, green beer.
That's right.
We don't think about, you know, who was St. Patrick? Oh. What did he stand for? Yeah. What did he mean? And why is he a saint?
Yeah. Bold, courageous. He was an unbeliever, mm-hmm. but his parents loved Jesus. And his granddad was was in the ministry. Mm-hmm. And so, but he was captured and he was sold into slavery to Ireland. Mm-hmm. He spent many years suffering and he found Jesus. God miraculously sent him back home where he trained to be a minister. And then guess what he did? He went right back to Ireland. He spoke their language. He gave them an alternate truth. That's the problem, is we want to bend the word of God to echo our culture, yeah. rather than letting it stand as it's different. And that's what's attracting people today, is I want to hear something different. I don't want it to blend in. And then he had compelling community, and he would go one community at a time. And the communities that he left behind literally changed that island and changed the world.
Incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I always talk about this whole false narrative on the separation of church and state,
right.
because I think there's so many people in the church that have fallen asleep and believe this, when Thomas Jefferson basically was saying, we don't want the government to create a religion, which is what we see kind of the government doing now with policy and trying to make it into law. How do you explain separation of church and state yeah. to the people that come and ask you that question?
Oh, well, first of all, we are allegiant to one kingdom. That's the first, is the first kingdom can rise and fall with different kings and Caesars and leaders and whatever it is. We serve the kingdom of God. And so that's our first king. So you do not serve United States of America above the kingdom of God. So if America is telling you don't preach, you preach.
Yeah.
because we serve the King. Now, with that said, we do fall under the local government. And here's, as you mentioned and quoted accurately earlier, what our calling is to do is to go change it.
Yeah.
I mean, our calling is to not hide back and separate, but to the best, what we preach at Keystone is, I'm preaching to some high school students, I want you to be the next mayor. I want you to run for Congress.
Right.
And what's the best version of our country is when we're closer to the Lord.
Mm-hmm. So says so in the Word.
Absolutely. And I've done a little bit of study on this, certainly not as much probably as you have, but I come away from my study, you quoted Thomas Jefferson, I come away from my study, and I see in our origins, they were not looking for a secular society.
No.
They truly believed in a Christian society, at least a deist society. Mm-hmm. But most of them were looking for a Christian society. They just didn't want to pick one.
Yes.
They didn't want the Church of England.
Yes.
They wanted freedom for you to choose your denomination and all that. If you understand what they came from, they didn't have the freedom to choose those mm-hmm. things. So they wanted the freedom to choose how you worship. But it wasn't the freedom from religion. It was the freedom for religion.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because, folks, you go back and read about that letter that Jefferson wrote to the Danbury Baptist mm-hmm. Convention of right. Connecticut. And the concern of the Baptists was that the Presbyterians were getting too many inroads in the government. And they're like, hey, you know, I thought we weren't going to have that. And Jefferson wanted to reassure them that there will be, no respect of any type of religion. We're not going to have any established type of religion. And it's funny you talked about making a stand because that's what Thomas More did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go back and look at the incredible film, A Man for All Seasons. When he stood up to King Henry VIII and said, you know, I worship God first, and I worship you second as the yeah. king, but I'm not going to worship you as, you know, God king. Mm-hmm. And he lost his life for it.
Yeah.
But that's what's at stake now today. So I want to tell you something. You know, before we came on air, you asked me about the little tomahawk here, and I explained, you know, you all know about the Black Robe Regiment, the ministers, the pastors who came out of the pulpit during the Revolutionary War, because they understood that where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. 2 Corinthians 3:17, I believe. And they understood how important that Judeo-Christian faith heritage mm-hmm. was for us. And as you see there, 2 Timothy 4:2-5, preach the word in season and out. And so therefore.
Oh, man. Wow.
Pastor Brandon Thomas is a recipient of the Steadfast and Loyal Black Robe Regiment Tomahawk.
Wow.
Because he is the embodiment of 2 Timothy 4:2-5. So I just want to say thank you so very much,
thank
Pastor.
Thank you. Wow, you honor me with this. Seriously, thank you very
much. You earned that.
I appreciate that.
And continue to preach that word and continue to grow Keystone Church and continue to encourage the next generation of Christian leaders.
Thank you.
Very kind. God
bless you. Bless you.
Thanks for being here with us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so very much for joining us on the Steadfast and Loyal program. And thank you to Pastor Brandon Thomas for his insightful words and inspirational words for us in these days and times. If you like this podcast, as always, please click the like button and share it with others. And until next time, steadfast and loyal.
Before they burn it down.
Entertainment expands your horizons, takes you on fantastic adventures, challenges your skills. Independent media never looked so good. Welcome to a new sphere of influence. Our words mean business. Traditional families are honored, and the American flag still flies.